Hi, I'm Femi Oke. On today's episode of The Stream, we are going to look at how climate change has made a community in Oregon go to war over water. Their story is told in the Fault Lines investigation, When the Water Stopped.
A water crisis in America's West is intensifying deep historic divisions.
We obliterated ecosystems to create agriculture at the expense of our tribes.
That's the way it's been since time began. The strong take it away from the weak.
Fault Lines investigates how climate change is pushing an Oregon town to breaking point.
We will fight because it's in our blood.
We are literally to the point that people are going to start shooting at each other.
When the Water Stopped on Al Jazeera.
Joining us to talk about the water conflict that you just saw there, Joey from the trailer. Hello, Ben. Hello, Emma. So nice to have you all on the stream today. Joey, introduce yourself to our international audience. Tell them who you are, what you do.
Hi, my name is Joey Gentry, and I am a member of the Klamath Tribes. I am not on our official tribal government, and I am not an official spokesperson. I just care deeply about my community, my homeland, my hometown, and I just want us to heal.
Hello, Ben. Welcome to the stream. Introduce yourself to our global audience.
My name is Ben Duval, and I'm a farmer south of Tule Lake, California. Along with my wife and two daughters, we grow alfalfa and wheat on the Klamath Reclamation Project. And I'm also the president of Klamath Water Users Association, but I'm not representing the organization in any official capacity here. Today, I'm just here much like Joey just said, as just somebody who wants to see some healing in this community and this situation remedied.
Good to have you. Emma, introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Emma Maris. I'm an environmental writer, and I live here in Klamath Falls. So I've been following this water conversation for about 8 years.
All right. Good to have you, Emma. All right. So now you've met our lineup. What would you like to ask them? If you're on YouTube, you can ask them anything concerned with the climate change in the region that they're talking about, how it may well be solved, things that you don't understand. Comment section's right there. I will try and get your comments into today's show. Emma, can you help us understand very basically what is the conflict about? You called it a conversation. Heads are being butted, to say the least. Explain it, but very briefly.
Sure. So there are a large number of farmers and ranchers who use water from this giant lake that we live nearby called Upper Klamath Lake. And every year they get a certain amount of water allocated to them by the federal government. This year, that amount was zero, and that was extremely stressful for the producers. But the reason that that amount was zero is because the water in the lake also has other uses, like keeping alive fish in the Upper Klamath Lake and salmon downstream on the way to the ocean, and also watering wildlife refuges that keep migratory birds alive on their way up. So what we're looking at here is a bunch of different people who all want the same water. And because of climate change, the water isn't there when everybody needs it.
But it used to be there. Let's have a look here on my laptop. This is little Joey. Joey, so adorable, fishing. How old are you there, Joey?
Probably 6 or so.
Oh, you've got a big one. I hope you caught that yourself. All right, so what changed? Because this is you as little Joey fishing. You fished with your dad. Let's have a quick look at dad there. And this is the water source that is now being argued about so fiercely. Remind us from when you were 6 to now. What happened to this water source?
Well, as mentioned, climate change has changed things. Drought conditions used to be abnormal, the anomaly, and now they're becoming the norm. We have too many consumptive users and not enough water. Basically, the government over-allocated, over-promised a finite resource, and now nature and our waterways cannot deliver enough water to our agricultural producers and our fish, which are on the brink of extinction.
There's another level to this in terms of farmers and then Indigenous people's relationship to the land. So I want to bring in Brooke Thompson. She's from Stanford University Water Resources Engineering Department, and she's a student. And she explained why Indigenous people in this region are fighting so hard to protect their water source. Here she is.
As Indigenous people, the Klamath River is everything to us. When the river's doing poorly, we do poorly. When we can't get food from the water because, say, our salmon populations are dying off because of the drought and water being allocated to other places, then our diabetes or obesity rates go up, and it's physically killing people. Our families can't be together. A lot of our family time is spent on the river, and when there's no economic income, when there's no practices culturally where we can go on the river anymore, then those families get split up and have to spend time other places. Who we are as Indigenous people are directly tied to the river. The word Yurok literally translates to downriver people. The Klamath River literally encompasses everything, who we are, what it means to be Indigenous. So for me, the issue along the Klamath River is a fight for life and death.
So Ben, that's one understanding of water and the relationship to Indigenous people from that area. I'm going to go via my laptop here because you shared some pictures with us as well, you and your daughters. What are we looking at here, Ben, so we understand your relationship to the land and water too?
This is me and my daughters, and we did a project where we replaced an older inefficient irrigation system with a new one, and that's something that has been ongoing, not only on my farm, but throughout the Klamath Reclamation Project, especially in the last 20 years as we've faced reduced allocations. As farmers, we feel like we're a steward of the resource. And speaking for myself, we try and stretch every drop of water as far as we can. And the further we get into these droughts, the more critical it becomes to do that. And we are all constantly trying to adapt and be able to make our systems as efficient as possible. Yeah. But at the end of the day, it does take some water in order to irrigate and sustain a farm. And we have to be economically healthy in order to make the kinds of investments that allow us to be more efficient with that water. And that's why droughts and a complete water shutoff like we saw this year are particularly devastating to our communities, because it takes away our ability to remain economically viable and to make the kind of long-term investments that help not only my community locally here as far as agriculture, but the entire watershed as a whole.
I want to put something to you, Ben, and this came up in the reporting from my colleague, Josh Rushing, who was reporting on the fish dying in the basin. And why the fish are dying. I'm going to play this clip to you, and then I'd love you to respond at the end of it. Let's take a look.
Every year, a thick cloud of blue-green algae clots the water in the lake. State health authorities warn people and their pets to keep out. With nowhere else to go, young suckerfish die en masse before reaching adulthood.
If you were to have your dog drink that, it would become incredibly ill, if not kill it.
This year, because of the extreme drought, extracting water for farms could put the remaining fish at risk.
There is very much a correlation between the quality of this water and the mortality of this fish. And the quality of this water is a direct result of irresponsible agricultural practices.
Ooh, that one's hard. Or is it, Ben?
Well, there's several different factors that go into that. First, I'll explain a little bit about the geography of this area. My farm, as most of the Klamath Reclamation Project, which is a federal irrigation project, it was one of the first reclamation projects that was started by the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation after the Reclamation Act was passed in the early 1900s. And it was one of the reasons was because it was recognized that it was such an ideal irrigation project. Just the way the geography is, the water supply, the incredible soils that we have here makes it one of the most efficient irrigation projects anywhere. And and extremely productive. But
Emma's smiling when you talked about efficient irrigation projects ever. Emma, why were you smiling? Articulate that smile.
Well, just in general, I think that what Ben's working towards is that he's actually downstream of the lake. The water he gets has already been filled with algae before it even gets anywhere near his property. So it's a complicated geography, and solving the problem is going to involve both solving issues of demand for water, which is where Ben and his fellow users come in, but also how we fix the quality of the water in the lake itself. And that's going to involve a lot of different land users and farmers further up in the watershed, closer to the mountains.
All right, so Ben, I was just trying to hurry you along, because irresponsible agricultural practices, they either are or they're not. And you were taking me on a longer story. Finish that story very quickly.
Sure. So the users above Upper Klamath Lake have more of an impact on Upper Klamath Lake, and that's principally in the tributary headwaters. And there's some issues. But again, going back to what I said, it takes stable farms that have the economic resources in order to update systems and change practices in order to fix those issues. Mm. And we're getting there, but nothing happens overnight. It takes time.
All right, so Joey, this is not just about agricultural practices. There's something much deeper going on here. Can you explain? Because there's a rift between the indigenous communities and the farming communities. Joey, tell us more.
Yes, and this is as difficult for me to say as it is for an agricultural producer to hear. We are unable to implement solutions which are in the fields and in the irrigation ditches and in ecosystem and habitat restoration. We are unable to implement those solutions because we're blinded by racism. We keep trying to undermine tribal treaty law, water law, and weaken the Endangered Species Act. And we keep kidding ourselves by saying this is an efficient irrigation system when it isn't. It's over a century-year-old engineering with no forethought or consideration that water is a finite resource. And here we are experiencing climate crisis, and there is not enough water to go around. We can't say that we're an efficient irrigation system when we don't even meter our consumptive use. So we can't claim that efficiency when it's not, we don't even know our actual usage.
Something that's difficult to. I understand where you're going, but I can tell you this, 100% of the water use on my farm is metered, and I know exactly how much I'm putting where, and I can look at that, and not all farms are like that, and stereotyping farms is as bad as stereotyping any group of people, and there's a shift in that, and you can definitely see more and more farms are updating and becoming more modern in the practices.
I have a question for you. Would you agree that the producers, the farmers, and the indigenous people probably agree on 85% of what needs to get done in order to fix the basin in terms of more restoration around the lake? And, you know, support for farmers potentially to have more flexibility in some of their contracts. There's a whole long list. What's frustrating for me as an observer is that I think that there's a lot of agreement, but there is this sort of sense of tension that stops that agreement from happening.
There can be. And I know, you know, one comment that was made was, that there was a lot of broken promises to the indigenous people. And there's something else that I'm in complete agreement with, because I have a promise from the United States government that's saying, yes, we're going to deliver this much water to your farm every year.
So Ben,
you have a right to that. And so we're both victims of broken promises.
All right, so Ben, if I just may just help our audience who may not have seen When the Water Stopped, the documentary, I highly recommend you watch it. It's streaming right now. The farmers, the homesteaders, they were told by the federal government at the time that they could have an infinite amount of water. You can come here and farm and you can have as much water as you like. The indigenous people whose land they came to live on, to work on, to farm, were also told that in the lake that they could have an infinite amount of fish that belonged to them, that was part of a treaty. Federal government promised two things to two different communities, and now we have climate change, and now we have a situation where those promises are not being kept, or whose promises should be kept first. That is the climate justice part of the conversation. Joy, I want to go back to what you were saying, where you just brought up racism. It's like, this is racism. I want to bring in a farmer called Leroy, and then we can just hear from ourselves how he talks about the indigenous people and this conflict that is going on right now. Here he is.
Why not work with them?
You know, have you ever tried to work with a gimme?
With a what?
A gimme.
A gimme.
Gimme, 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 gimme. Hmm. That's like working with a tribe. Gimme, 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 gimme. They don't give you. Gimme, 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 gimme.
Joey, why can't this conversation work out?
That's an example of why and the roadblocks we have. He dehumanized us to the point of a gimme. And that failure to recognize us as people, or the failure to recognize the strength of our nation-to-nation treaty, is preventing us from implementing those solutions in the fields and those irrigation systems. We're fighting the wrong fight in court. For decades, irrigators have tried to come after our water rights, which have been reaffirmed, water and treaty rights, which have been reaffirmed in the courts for the past 20 years. And at this point, so much time has passed that we, in response to Leroy's comment of being a gimme, I think that we are legally affirmed in our position and morally confirmed and valid. There's no more room to give. We are in crisis. If our locally and globally, we have as few as 50 to 60 harvests left before complete soil desertification. And so not only is our tribe trying to preserve this resource for us locally, but globally, implementing more regenerative agricultural solutions is going to save humanity. We have to find the solutions. And the first step is addressing the strength of our treaty and acknowledging the injustices we felt.
Yes, Emma, go ahead.
I was just going to point out that, I think that the root of this is the fact that these promises that were made are not all able to be fulfilled at the same time in the current regime. It is important to realize that the treaty is 1864 and most of those homesteading promises came later. So if you're going to look at, and that's how the courts have tended to look at it, is that first in time, meaning the oldest promise takes precedence over the newer promises. So that is why you might hear people say, well, the tribes hold all the cards when it comes to water, because the courts have said that they have the first in time right to the water.
Right.
What's tricky about all this is that we're suing each other instead of getting together and coming up with solutions that work for everyone in the basin. That's what we really need to be doing. And everybody would rather be working together than suing each other. So it's really frustrating when we get stuck in these cycles of suing each other.
All right. I'm wondering if I could this comment.
I agree completely.
Yeah. So, Ben, let me play this to you, because Steve Kundra is a retired farmer. Drawing on his wisdom, this is what he told us a couple of hours ago. Here he is.
The key to resolving the Klamath Basin water conflict is for the diverse communities of the basin to work together. No political or legal process will create a durable and just solution until the people that share the Klamath River work together. Seek political leadership that brings the parties of conflict together. Look to the media that does not portray villainy, where there are people only trying to survive, both farmers and tribes. The key to our survival will be conservation, innovation, adaptation, and the pragmatic realization that time past is not time future.
Does that sound reasonable? First Ben, then Joey. Ben.
Absolutely, it sounds reasonable to me. That's what we've been hoping for a long time.
And Joey.
Of course, absolutely. And I think to get to that point, we have to agree that we are fighting for the same thing, which is how do we farm this region so that both our fish and our farmers can thrive? And that answer is right here, soil health.
Joey, show that to us again. What are you showing to us?
I'm just showing you healthy soil.
All right.
And healthy soil is healthy water, healthy fish, healthy ecosystems. But we've been so embroiled in court battles that we haven't been able to focus on implementing the systems and the solutions that will unite us, save our agricultural industry here, and save our ecosystems and our fish, heal our communities. Like, that's ultimately, we are all just trying to survive and thrive.
Yes, I offered up this conversation to our audience on YouTube as well as watching on TV. A couple of thoughts here, just very quickly. Let's make this a speed round. This is Stella Doro. Stella Doro says, the native indigenous peoples are not the ones who contributed heavily to pollution for climate change, let alone misuse the land. Instant reaction from you, Emma.
I think that's largely true. I think it's also true that we're in a unique situation in the Klamath Basin, that our own soil is so rich in nutrients that it's polluting the lake, just the volcanic soil around here. So it's wetland restoration that's going to save us in the upper basin.
Another one. This one I'm going to put to you, Ben. Cutting edge best practices in efficient irrigation and land crop management are the least that's required and greatly appreciated. Ben, your thoughts as a farmer?
My thoughts as a farmer is that when I look at this, particularly related to climate change, that irrigated agriculture, particularly sustainable irrigated agriculture like we have here in the Klamath Basin, is one of the few ways that we can insulate our food supply against the effects of climate change. And I figure that we need to be here to be part of the solution, and we need to be economically healthy and have healthy communities in order to do that.
I'm going to bring this point up to you, Joey, just very quickly again. On my laptop, we were talking about this whole show on Twitter, and we looked at maybe this way into the conversation. Is racism at the root of a water war in Oregon? And then Esty says, probably it is America. Joey, can this problem be solved?
It must be solved. We must solve our problems locally, because they are a microcosm of what we're facing globally. Yes, they can be solved, or else I wouldn't be here and have the confidence to speak of these issues. But when you think about it, agriculture as a whole, 98% of America's farmland is owned by European Americans, by white people. So only 2% of America's farmland are owned by people of color. That in and of itself sort of exemplifies a problem.
Ben, I see you nodding, just very briefly as we wrap up this show.
No, I agree with that. That's, that's a fact. And I don't think that we should hide from our history and the things that have happened in the past, things that I've heard talked about before, relating to the Klamath tribes. There's huge problems in the past. And I think that we need to acknowledge that so that we can learn from it, so that we don't repeat those same mistakes in the future.
All right. I really appreciate you having this very candid conversation and a very raw one right here on the stream. Joey and Ben and Emma, thank you so much. Thank you on YouTube for your comments and your questions. Have a look here on my laptop. The reason we started this conversation was because of a Fault Lines investigation called When the Water Stopped, an Oregon Town at its Breaking Point. It tells us so much about the climate crisis and America today. Do check it out. It's currently streaming at aljazeera.com. And that's our show for today. Take care. I'll see you next time.